Today's our draft.
I've got to pick a good fantasy team. When I lost last year, they made me do something so humiliating.
Fantasy football has turned every man in this town into a trash-talking monster.
An 85-yard field goal? You've got to be kidding me. Refresh, refresh.
We are taking this into overtime.
Coming out here.
Hello and welcome to the Chicago Football Fantasy Podcast, presented by your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. I'm your host, John Solig, the senior digital editor here at ChicagoFootball.com. You can follow me on Twitter at JSolig. Join us today in studio, not on the Chevy Trucks Hotline, ChicagoFootball.com writer and USA Today's NFC North correspondent, Arthur Arkish. You can follow him on Twitter at Arthur Arkish. Arthur, how are you doing today?
Excellent. Nice to be in studio. This is a fun change of pace and ready to talk some fantasy football.
Yeah, you can't see this because you're listening to the podcast, but Arthur is all dressed up in a tie. Very nice. You're making us look bad here.
Just for this occasion specifically. It's a special day for our listeners and for us here in studio.
All right, a couple of housekeeping items first. We've got a great interview with Pat Fitzmorris, a contributor to the Football Girl and 4for4, as well as our annual fantasy football magazine. And we want to start with a thank you. We got into the iTunes store this week, and it was nice to see the downloads pile up and the subscribers and us go up the iTunes podcast ranking. So thank you very much. We do want to make sure that our podcast is worth your time, and clearly it is so far. So thank you again. And as always, our show format, we start with season-long fantasy football and then move into daily fantasy sports or DFS content. So we'll start with season-long and some news and notes. Arian Foster, Houston Texans running back. Surprise, surprise, he's injured. It could just be 4 to 6 weeks with a groin injury. Arthur, how far do you downgrade Arian Foster?
Well, let's start with what we're seeing, and that's in fantasy drafts all over the place, his ADP has slipped to number 18 among running backs. So, you know, clearly people are catching on to Foster's groin injury and subsequent surgery that's going to keep him out an estimated 4 to 6 weeks. I think at least down to 18 is probably the area you want to be looking. It's just concerning. Everyone knows Foster. You mentioned the little joke at the top. He just can't really stay on the field. Even worse, it tends to be these soft tissue, lower body, the groin, the lower legs, and everything like that that have seemed to pile up. So it's a definite issue, and it's too bad because he's an offense where Bill O'Brien was going to try and just run him right into the ground. We saw that last year. But I'm definitely a little leery about Arian Foster at this point. It's a tough issue to come back from.
And you were probably handcuffing Foster in your drafts anyway, weren't you?
Yeah, I would think so. They like Alfred Blue a lot in the one game that he got a full-time load last year. I think he had 31 carries. It was like a franchise record for running backs, actually, and he looked pretty good. Granted, that's a small sample size, but yeah, there's reason to believe that Blue can be a contributor. There's also reason to believe they want to get someone a little more reliable. I know they were kicking the tires on several veterans.
Yeah, I'm not personally an Alfred Blue guy. I just don't see it. How about you?
I mean, I don't think he has any special trait that's going to jump out at you. I think it's more about the opportunity that he could find himself in. Again, Bill O'Brien, very much a run-first guy. That offense clearly lacks a quarterback at the moment, so you can look at that as a positive or a negative. Obviously, there's going to be more chances to run the football. There's also going to be a lot of defenses geared up to stop Alfred Blue, whatever veteran it happens to be, until they prove they can get the ball, you know, down the field through the air as well.
And with Foster out, does that help or hurt DeAndre Hopkins, who also loses Andre Johnson, who was on the other side of him last year?
Yeah, it's a good question. I think I don't think it can help because you have to force defenses to be honest. And again, with the Alfred Blue sample size and kind of his sort of somewhat ordinary skill set, defenses aren't going to worry about him too much. Hopkins is a big play threat down the field, but he's going to now see extra attention until someone figures out they can get it down on the ground consistently.
And I'm with you. I think Foster at 18 is probably a solid number right now. I'm probably letting someone else take him at this point just because of his injury history.
You're right, and I think I'm in the same boat. Again, it's a shame. He's a guy where I thought 3 weeks ago he could be a really great buy-low candidate. People, you know, struck gold with him last year because for some of the same reasons, some issues, or same concerns, I should say. So, yeah, we'll just have to kind of play the wait-and-see game on Foster. I'd also add that they have two great run defenses they'll face out of the division. They got to go to New York and also face Buffalo late in the season, so that's two more games where you probably wouldn't be super thrilled about maybe even a healthy Foster as anything more than an RB2.
Ooh. I'm probably staying away from a DFS, too. Moving on with the Chicago Bears, Kevin White, we're recording this on Monday afternoon. He just started running on grass today. Is Eddie Royal an igniter now that Kevin White is out? Where do you do? What do you do with Eddie Royal in drafts?
There hasn't been a more impressive, well, I don't want to say player because Pernell McPhee's looked great consistently in Bourbonnais where the Bears are holding training camp. But on the offensive side of the ball, no one's been better than Eddie Royal. 15 combined touchdowns over the past 2 years. When he signed with the Bears, I wasn't particularly excited. I thought they gave him a little bit too much money. But all of a sudden, you're seeing that chemistry that he had with Jay Cutler his rookie season, Royals rookie season, that is, at 90-something balls he caught. He is going to be a reliable target in the middle of the field, I think outside as well. And I think we talked about a little bit on last week's show. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see him outproduce Kevin White this year. Obviously, fantasy, reality, however way you look at it. I think the arrow is pointing up right now for Royal in the situation he's in.
Yeah, I agree. I'm staying away from Kevin White. And given Eddie Royal's contract when they signed him, I think they gave him $10 million guaranteed. Yep. That tells me that he's going to be a big part of the offense, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, that's all indications we're receiving just from watching the way they're using him. It's been mostly in the slot, but they've raved about his ability to play inside or outside. And, you know, obviously we don't have to pay the salary, so I shouldn't worry about it too much. But when I saw that $10 million, that's what jumped out to me. That's like top slot receiver in the NFL money. Randall Cobb only got a little bit more than that. Eddie Royal is not Randall Cobb, not close. But I think that that rapport, both with Jay Cutler, with Adam Gase, the new offensive coordinator who had him in Denver as well, there's a comfort there. I think maybe that's part of the reason you overpay a little bit, because you get your own guy. It's not as much of a leap of faith. You know what you're getting.
All right, we'll stay in the NFC North, but broaden out to the topic of rookie running backs here. Lions rookie Ameer Abdullah is shining at camp, according to basically all reports. Todd Gurley, the St. Louis rookie, going in an average of number 42 in a 10-team draft. Abdullah's 97. Now, I'm not comparing Gurley and Abdullah. I think you and I, we talked on a previous show, Gurley definitely worth that number. But is Abdullah better than 97, do you think, overall?
Yeah, I think he sounds a little bit undervalued right now. The Lions do love Joik Bell. He is still the starter, but he's coming off both Achilles and knee issues this offseason. And while we hear and have been reading that he is pretty much full go in terms of running on the sideline, so he's at the end stage of what Kevin White is just getting started at before he can get on the field, he's not a special back. He's averaged less than 4 yards per carry the past 2 seasons. They've got so many weapons in that offense. They've just rebuilt the entire offensive line, so there's going to be a great opportunity for someone. It's the final year of Bell's contract. It's an interesting situation. I just think Abdullah is more of a spark plug. He brings a totally different dimension to that offense. And whether he's going to be the starter right away or not, he won't be immediately. But I just think that he brings that big play element. And once you see that a few times, obviously the coaches will be a little more compelled to get him in there. So whether he's a stash guy now, one of your good running back depth guys to fill out the bench with a much higher ceiling, I guess that's kind of how I would view Abdullah at this point.
I'm going to call it right now. I think Abdullah ends up with more yards than Bell, given Bell's injury history. I really loved Abdullah's speed coming out of Nebraska. He can catch the ball a little bit. I think by the end of the season, you're going to have Abdullah on more rosters than Joik Bell.
Yeah, I don't think that's crazy at all. Like you said, the pass-catching ability, and Bell is a nice goal line back, but he's more of a one-dimensional between-the-tackles kind of guy. So that wants to be a downhill offense that really could cater to both backs. We'll see who's able to jump out. Obviously, the much greater upside resides with Abdullah.
All right, Sunday night was the first NFL preseason game of the season, the Hall of Fame game, Vikings and Steelers. Arthur, anybody stand out to you from that game?
Well, yeah, I cover the NFC North, so I was definitely intrigued with what the Vikings would roll out there. And first of all, I just have to say, you better have had your rosters out. The Steelers didn't play anyone, so if you're hoping to see Antonio Brown or Ben Roethlisberger, that wasn't happening. But there were a few interesting developments, I felt, with the Vikings and a couple of their mid-round rookies, Stephon Diggs and Mykole Pruitt. Granted, this is the first preseason game, take it with a grain of salt, but I can tell you that this was them building off what's been really impressive camps for both guys so far. I think Mykole Pruitt in particular, he's a tight end, a fifth rounder, and he's in an offense with North Turner, of course, who just loves using tight ends and using multiple tight ends when he can. Pruitt caught a touchdown last night, at the Hall of Fame game, looked really good doing it. He's an intriguing guy, especially with Kyle Rudolph's durability question marks. He's another kind of guy that could provide some value that I don't think is really on anyone's radar at this point.
Yeah, I liked Stephon Diggs coming out of Maryland. I like the speed. I like the hands. If he can just, I think, get his route running down, I think he could be a legitimate threat for the Vikings in their passing game with Teddy Bridgewater.
Yeah, I do too. It'll be fun to watch. You know, it's always fun to watch the young guys kind of grow together, and Diggs, we'll see if it can happen right away, because suddenly the Vikings have all these pass catchers that they're kind of trying to sort out roles for. But yeah, Diggs has been particularly impressive as a return man. He had a big punt return in the Canton game. But yeah, if he can, like you said, continue to polish, maybe he can contribute sooner than later. I don't think they're in love with Jarius Wright. That's the slot receiver right now in Minnesota.
Stephon Diggs, maybe a late round stash, or if you're in a keeper or dynasty league, someone you can take late and just hold on to for a while.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. Again, as a fifth-round pick, you know, it just looks like another one of those, you know, intriguing moves that Rick Spielman seems to make, and this draft class looks like it has a chance to be really, really special for Minnesota.
And on the Pittsburgh side, another rookie wide receiver I know you liked in the draft, and I liked from what I saw last night, other than a bobbled potential touchdown, was Sammy Coates.
Yep, and that bobbled touchdown is what you'll kind of have to deal with a little bit. It's the inconsistent hands you worry about. He's very much a raw prospect, but that's the same thing they were saying about one Martavis Bryant at this time last year. They're similar size-speed ratio guys, and my biggest concern is how does he get on the field? Because I know, you know, Antonio Brown might be the best receiver in football. Obviously, Bryant is quickly ascending, and I know they love Marcus Wheaton too. So Sammy Coates maybe is more of a dynasty guy that you're going to look after, a keeper league if you can get him late. But yeah, you can't teach that speed. He's very exciting, and another one of those Kevin Colbert, you know, try and draft and develop these raw receivers.
Okay, we've got a great interview with Pat Fitzmaurice. He is a contributor to the Football Girl and 4for4, as well as our fantasy football annual magazine. You can follow him on Twitter at Fitz_FF. Here is my interview with Pat Fitzmaurice.
I want to start with some season-long draft strategy with you. If I'm in a 10-team standard league, what position has the most depth this year, and what position has the least?
I would say that it's generally for 10 teams, I think, you know, there's a lot of depth at wide receiver. I think in a 10-team league, you're probably not going to have any problems finding even third, fourth, and fifth wide receivers this year. You know, generally, I think quarterback's a pretty deep position, but in a 10-team league, you know, the fewer the members in the league, I think the more important it is to have a difference maker at a position like quarterback or tight end where you're only throwing out one guy every week. But, you know, in a 10-teamer, I think you're going to find ample depth at just about all the positions, and it's just more about who can get the most true difference makers.
How would that factor into your draft strategy then, the positional depth?
You know, in a 10-teamer, I'd be more willing to take a quarterback early. In a 12-teamer or a 14-teamer, I would be more apt to wait on quarterbacks since, you know, I think there are maybe 12 really good ones, top-level starting caliber guys, plus then another 4, 5, or 6 who could effectively be platooned. You know, and in a 10-teamer, I think it's more about upside and finding guys who, if they really click, you know, are going to be big difference makers. And, you know, in a 12- or 14-team league, I think it's, you know, important to find guys who have high floors and who can be counted on to, you know, give you dependable points every week.
When you're looking in the late rounds, are you more apt to take a flyer on some rookie or some unheralded guy, or are you looking for guys with high floors in the later rounds?
Yeah, it kind of depends on the makeup of the team and what I've drafted to that point. I kind of like to stay flexible on that, but I kind of like to balance the portfolio a little bit, John, and have, like, a mix of both, I think. You know, some guys like Anquan Boldin, for instance, you know, a veteran who's been producing every year very consistently but gets overlooked because of his age, the feeling that eventually the bottom's going to drop out for him. And, you know, but all in all, a relatively safe play. It's just that we know, you know, he probably doesn't have any more 1,300-yard seasons left in him. You know, and then I'm also happy to take a flyer on a guy like Devontae Parker on the Dolphins, who's got some injury issues right now that might possibly sideline him for the first few weeks of the season. But, you know, if he eventually gets healthy and gets rolling, has the talent to potentially be big, kind of a home run pick in the later rounds. So, you know, I wouldn't mind having, like, one of each of those guys on my bench.
Gotcha. How about guys who have changed teams, guys like LeSean McCoy, DeMarco Murray, Jimmy Graham? How do you evaluate them going into your fantasy draft?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I think with all three of those guys, there's the perception that the change of teams isn't necessarily a good thing. You know, McCoy didn't really have his best season last year with the Eagles, plus the fact that Chip Kelly seemed, you know, pretty willing to part with him and, you know, not get much in return. Kiko Alonso, a good player, but one who's coming off a torn ACL. So, you know, plus I think, you know, the Bills aren't going to have much balance on offense with their quarterback problems. And, you know, they don't have the greatest offensive line either. So I'm a little wary of McCoy this year. You know, Murray, certainly I don't think is going to see the same sort of volume he saw last year with Dallas, which is really sort of a rarity in this running back by committee era that we're in for a back to get as many carries as Murray did last year. So, you know, plus the presence of Ryan Matthews, I think he's going to see less volume, although if he stays healthy, he should still be pretty effective. So maybe a slight drop-off for him this year. And then Graham, I don't know, I guess I'm a little more bullish on him than a lot of people are. He's probably not going to catch quite as many passes as he did in New Orleans just because the Seahawks really like to run the ball and play more conservatively. But, you know, he is far and away the best pass catcher the Seahawks have, and I think he's still going to do really well in the touchdown department. You know, he might just take a slight haircut on receptions and yardage, but I think he'll still be a top tight end and a guy worth targeting.
Yeah, he's definitely the first tight end on my board right now. We talked about player changes. What about coaching changes? How do you evaluate that in terms of fantasy relevance for some of these guys?
Yeah, I mean, I try to keep on top of that and just generally, you know, offensive coordinators know which guys like to run the ball more, which guys pass, which guys tend to have coax, you know, excellent seasons out of running backs or wide receivers or tight ends. You know, the fact that North Turner, for instance, is known for, you know, getting some really great years out of his running backs and also out of his tight ends, you know, so it's maybe reasonable to expect a pretty good return to form for Adrian Peterson and, you know, for Kyle Rudolph to maybe have a good season for the Vikings if he's able to stay healthy for a change.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Who's being overvalued right now in terms of ADP?
Off the top of my head, I would say Drew Brees is probably a guy. I think, you know, he's starting to get older, and more so than that, he just lost so many key targets from last year. I mean, going from Jimmy Graham to Josh Hill at tight end is just going to be an enormous drop-off, I think, even though some people have high hopes for Josh Hill. But, you know, Graham is just a special player, and it's going to be really hard to replace him. Plus, they also lost Kenny Stills, who's a very underrated receiver, a guy who can stretch the field and who also was managed to have a pretty good catch rate for a guy who, you know, was often targeted pretty deep downfield. So I think the Saints are going to be a little more run-oriented. I think Brees has already shown hints that he's not quite the same quarterback he was 4 or 5 years ago. You know, and I think people still kind of regard him, a lot of people anyway, as being at the top of the quarterback heap. So I think he could be in for a little bit of slippage this year. And, you know, I think a lot of people are pretty high on DeAndre Hopkins on Houston. I'm not quite so high on him. You know, he saw a lot of coverage from opponents' number two cornerbacks last year while, you know, teams were still using their top cornerbacks to go against Andre Johnson. Andre's now with the Colts, as everyone knows, and, you know, Hopkins is going to be seeing the opponent's best cover man every year. The Houston quarterbacks, I mean, it's going to be pretty terrible, whether it's Hoyer or Ryan Mallett or Tom Savage, if they eventually give him a chance. You know, now with Arian Foster getting hurt, I mean, it's just there's so little skill position talent on Houston's roster other than Hopkins. I don't see him having a real productive year, at least not the breakout year that a lot of people are expecting.
Gotcha. Going back to what you said about the Saints, is Mark Ingram a target then?
Yeah, I mean, I think so. I actually think there's a chance that both Ingram and Spiller can be worthy fantasy starters for them. You know, C.J. Spiller came over from Buffalo and seemed like Doug Marrone didn't really maximize Spiller's talents. He kind of liked to run him between the tackles a lot when Spiller is more of a space back who, you know, does well getting the ball in the flats as a receiver or, you know, plays that are designed to go wide. And I think that really sort of fits well with what Sean Payton likes to call. I think the Payton-Spiller combination is going to be a very good one and a lucrative one for Spiller. You know, I think it's going to be a nice combination. And I don't think Ingram's the kind of back who's going to go for, you know, 1,500 yards, and he doesn't catch many passes. But I do think he's got a pretty high floor and that, you know, he's a real good bet to be a 1,000-yard back.
Okay, last thing, what are you watching in training camp and preseason? What are your priorities when you're sitting down to watch a preseason game?
Oh, man, it's, you know, I guess I'm really more so than the top guys. I'm looking at the, you know, bottom of the roster guys for, you know, guys that could be potential call-ups in season. I kind of like to, I think when you watch preseason games, you can sort of piece together how coaches see their depth chart by the way guys are used and, you know, when guys come into the game. You know, and more specifically, I think there are a lot of interesting situations that have to be sorted out. The running back battles in Atlanta and Cleveland and Tampa and a few other places. So, yeah, there's a lot yet to be decided, and, you know, it's going to be fun to finally see some live action.
Once again, thank you to Pat Fitzmaurice. You can follow him on Twitter at Fitz_FF. Arthur, I want to go over something Pat said about Drew Brees. Normally, he's just this super reliable guy. You take Drew Brees, you say, okay, I know what I'm getting. Maybe not this year, Pat says. What do you think?
I'm kind of torn. I'm glad he brought it up. I think it's a great topic. We have to remember Drew Brees in his quote-unquote down year last year was the sixth overall fantasy scorer regardless of position. So he remains a valuable commodity and one that, again, even in a down year, you know, you were in really, really good shape if you had him as your QB1. So I think that, Pat, there's a ton of merit to what he said about sort of the shift of the offense and obviously Jimmy Graham, Kenny Stills departing, a major emphasis on the run game and maybe a way of prolonging, kind of like what you saw with Peyton Manning last year once he was hurt and they shifted in season to be a run-first team. So I think that that, you know, maybe would cause a little bit of trepidation, but he's ADP of number five overall at the quarterback position now. And I don't know if I can say I think he's really overvalued because who are you taking ahead of him? Maybe Ben Roethlisberger you make an argument for.
Maybe.
Perhaps. And then right after that, it goes downhill pretty quickly with Matt Ryan. And not that there's anything wrong. He's a fine quarterback, but there's no way I'm drafting Ryan over Brees. So I think he's still relatively decently slotted, but, you know, there's certainly some more concerns with him going into this year than typical.
The way I look at Brees, he used to be, you know, top three, I think, unquestioned. I think it was him, Rodgers, Manning. That was probably some order per year, top three. I think now he's at the end of that top tier where you still feel really good about it, but it's not Rodgers. It's not Luck. It's not any guy like that. You still feel really good, but not as good as you used to.
I would agree with you, but I would just add to that that outside of Rodgers and Luck, everyone else is in that. You know, I think there's such a big drop-off, in my opinion, now because, you know, who knows what happens with Tom Brady's suspension? Who knows what happens with Peyton Manning's neck and quad and whatever else? He's, you know, his offensive line that's is losing pieces by the day. So there's not a lot of separation at the quarterback position, and then that just goes back to the age-old question, how early do you go for these guys, and is it worth reaching for guys like Rodgers and Luck? I'm not so sure, but I, you know, I think you can win these leagues in a variety of ways, so I'm not going to discourage anyone who's buying into that.
Okay, that'll do it for the season-long portion of the podcast. We'll now move on to Daily Fantasy Sports or DFS content. First thing I want to tell you about, we're going to be talking with Roto-World's Evan Silva. We have an interview slated for Wednesday, so you're going to hear plenty from Evan, and we're really excited about that. And now we'll move on to DraftKings holding on some preseason contests. There's not a lot of industry news, so we'll get into some preseason contests here. If you're going to be playing on the preseason contest, I think there's a lot of edge to be gained here. And I'll give you an example. I was in about four or five leagues that started with the Hall of Fame game on Sunday. And they include the Thursday slate, which includes the Bears-Dolphins game. Give you some ownership percentages of some guys. Adrian Peterson was 4% owned. DHB, Darius Heyward-Bey was 9% owned. Le'Veon Bell was 5% owned. Antonio Brown was 4% owned. None of those guys played, and it was announced days before the game that these guys weren't playing. If you're playing DFS, you need to follow beat writers. You need to follow a guy like Arthur Arkish on Twitter, because some of these coaches are going to come out and say, you know what, my starters aren't playing. Adrian Peterson has not had a preseason carry since 2011. So if you're in a DFS league and you see Adrian Peterson getting rostered, that's a dead spot. You're not getting any points out of that. So, Arthur, are you going to hand out a couple of DFS tips for everybody if you hear some Bears that aren't going to play?
I would say, if Kevin White has any percent ownership at this point, then those are some snoozing drafters. Obviously, Kevin White is not looking likely to play in the preseason at all. We'll have to wait and see about a guy like Matt Forte. I wouldn't be stunned to see him get very little work, too. But I think, DFS preseason play is a pretty slippery slope. You just got to be careful. I guess where conventional wisdom would normally kind of suggest that you are, a little more hesitant about a lot of rookies during the regular season, those are the guys you want to target in the preseason. Those are the guys getting the extended looks. Anyone from a first rounder who's healthy to, an undrafted guy that's turning heads, these are the guys that are trying to earn roster spots. These are the guys with the most on the line, and they're probably the guys who are going to win you leagues.
And the play of the week ended up being the first DFS disappointment of the year, and that's Pittsburgh quarterback Landry Jones. a couple of days before the game, Pittsburgh coach Mike Tomlin said, quote, "It is going to be a significant game for Landry Jones. He is going to play a lot." And Landry Jones ended up playing the entire game. You are not going to find another quarterback in the NFL that is going to play an entire preseason game. So that's the play. If you're gonna, you look for guys who have the opportunity, and they were going to play multiple quarters, especially at quarterback. If you ended up playing Teddy Bridgewater last night or Sunday night, you got one series out of him, and that was it. Landry Jones, if it weren't for a couple of bobbled touchdowns, and then, he's still Landry Jones, so he's not all that great. He missed a couple of touchdown passes, but he was the play. So you need to look for guys that are going to have an opportunity to play. So look around, look for beat writers, follow Arthur Arkish, follow Kevin Fishbane, follow Nate Atkins, because they're going to give all that information that they can out about who's going to play and who is got an opportunity. There's going to be Bears that are going to be there. There are going to be other guys, other beat writers you can follow on Twitter that are going to let you know who we're going to play. And I'll have an article up Thursday afternoon trying to basically consolidate all that information for you. I threw out three guys last night, Sunday night: Landry Jones, Dree Archer, and Stephon Diggs. Archer was okay. Landry Jones was a bit of a bust. Diggs, we both liked what we saw, but again, just a missed touchdown there.
Yeah, almost hit on Diggs, and that would have been the elusive return points, which actually, depending on how your league scores, you may or may not have received if he did get in the end zone. But, I guess just the last thing to add, and like you said, there maybe is some opportunity because some of these guys are snoozing when you're talking about the preseason. But remember one more thing. Defenses tend to be ahead of offenses early, so your expectations across the board should be tempered, but I guess there's got to be a winner and a loser, even in the preseason fantasy.
Absolutely, and DraftKings does sort of flatten the edge a little bit. Everyone has the same salary, so you're not trying to, it's not like Andrew Luck is worth $10,000. Everybody's worth, I believe, $5,000 or $5,500. So okay. You're going to have salary left over. Everybody will, no matter the pick. So that'll do it. Don't forget to get all the best fantasy football news at chicagofootball.com from our fantasy experts, and listen to our podcast each week as we get you prepared for your drafts and help you win throughout the season. We'd like to remind you that our podcast is available on iTunes, so please head over and subscribe and never miss an episode. We want to thank our sponsor, your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealers. Heavy duty demands have met their match with high strength steel Silverado HD. Drive what Dan Hampton drives and visit ChevyDriveChicago.com today. We hope you enjoyed the show intro at the beginning of our podcast. Of course, you heard clips from a great episode of The Simpsons airing last season, which you can now watch 24/7 on the FX Now or Fox Now app. Our intro song is performed by Seven Streeter, which you can find and purchase at the iTunes Store and through Atlantic Records. Big thanks to Pat Fitzmaurice and Arthur Arkish for being guests on today's show. Our producer today was Dan Mott. Our associate producer was Jason Frommer. I'm John Solly. For all of us at Chicago Football, we hope you have a great week, and we will catch you next time.